views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. Each week, you'll learn how to navigate the global shift of consciousness and explore the deeper knowledge within. Welcome home. Now here's your host, Dr. Kelly Neff.
Hello everyone, I am Dr. Kelly and you are listening to Lucid Planet Radio on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour and let us help you experience inspiration, creativity, and knowledge. Every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on Lucid Planet Radio, we will have some of the most gifted scientists, healers, speakers, and authors helping you to discover the greatest version of yourself. You can find out more at the LucidPlanet.com and listen to all of my show archives at LucidPlanetRadio.com. Today's show is all about the potential new therapies out there that might be able to help us address the epidemic of mental health problems in our country. Millions of people in America are struggling with anxiety disorders, depression, and PTSD. Some statistics say as many as 40 million suffer from anxiety, and at least 1 in 10 suffer from depression, but we know that the actual statistics might be even higher. I have battled both in my life, anxiety and depression and PTSD, and I can speak from personal experience and also from my experience as a mental health professional that these issues are incredibly real and very challenging. We are giving prescription drugs like SSRIs to help with depression, only for researchers and experts to now argue that these medicines designed to affect our serotonin might not actually have the impact on depression that we think they have. We're prescribing so many prescription drugs. Did you know that of 16,000 drug overdose deaths annually, the CDC says that over 15,000 are actually due to prescription medications and not illegal drugs. So basically, we have this picture emerging of people who are over-medicated, under-treated for their actual mental health condition and desperately searching for solutions. So maybe you've heard about the new research coming out of an organization called MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies. They're investigating how psychedelic medicines can help us address some of the more pressing mental health concerns, like anxiety, PTSD, and more. And today, I am so excited to welcome Rick Doblin, who is the founder and executive director of MAPS. And we are going to talk about the emerging psychedelic renaissance that is taking place as humans are beginning to realize that psychedelic medicines ranging from ayahuasca to MDMA, to psilocybin, LSD, DMT, and also cannabis can actually potentially have some real benefits in enhancing our well-being. After all, it has been well documented that humans and even animals have been eating psychedelic plants for thousands of years in our, you know, former indigenous and tribal settings. And if Terence McKenna's theories are to be believed, this has even been an important component of the evolution of the human brain. But anyway, that's a side note. It's really a special treat to welcome Rick Doblin to the show. His accomplishments in furthering the field of psychedelic research and therapy have been nothing short of legendary, and he has been one of my heroes for years, and I'm so excited to finally interview him. So welcome, Rick, to the show.
Thank you, Kelly. Wow, what an introduction. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I guess really the first question is, I'm so excited to have you here. What inspired you to do what you've done in your life? What inspired this study into psychedelic therapy and all of the work around the public policy side of legalizing psychedelic therapy?
Well, I think I was inspired by fear and trauma. So that as I grew up, I was born in 1953, and I am Jewish and had distant relatives killed in the Holocaust. And
wow, me too.
I've got a lot of it. Yeah, sad to hear that. I mean, not sad that you're Jewish, but that,
you're absolutely right.
Yeah, so I just grew up with this, trying to struggle with this concept of how could people so dehumanize millions of others that they would just try to wipe them off the face of the earth. Yeah. And that was something that I had a very loving family, and I think that helped me to look at those things that I was really scared of. And then growing up in America during the Cuban Missile Crisis and the whole idea of, you know, kids in school being taught to duck under their desks and cover in case there was a nuclear explosion, you know, that, the whole idea that we could just incinerate the entire world was terrifying. And then having this Vietnam War that I was in the last year of the lottery and trying to figure out how I was going to respond to that. So I grew up in kind of material comforts of America after World War II, and my material needs were taken care of, a loving family. But I looked around and I saw that it was these kind of psychological problems of dehumanization, scapegoating, projecting one's shadow out on others, that was the real threat to me and to others. And it felt like psychedelics had this ability to produce experiences that could balance people's intellectual development with their psychological, emotional, and spiritual development. And when I woke up to the potential of psychedelics, it was right after the crackdown. So in 1971 and 72, when I went to college and was decided to try LSD, it was remarkable what it did. And it really opened up for me this interior world of emotions, of intuition, of spirituality that I hadn't really been experiencing before. And I looked at what was going on in the 60s, and I felt that a lot of the cultural turmoil was when people would have these experiences of unity, of connection with life, with people that were different than themselves, that fundamental mystical experience of it's all being connected has profound political implications in terms of tolerance, understanding our commonality, appreciating differences rather than being scared of differences, being more mystical rather than more fundamentalist. And so the crackdown on psychedelics occurred at a time when I was a draft resistor to Vietnam. I didn't think I could have a normal career. Yeah. And so I thought, well, I'll just focus on being a psychedelic therapist. I need therapy, and the world needs therapy. And that's really what I decided as an 18-year-old boy, that's what I would focus on.
It's just, it's quite remarkable where it's taken you in the journey.
Oh, my gosh. it's incredible. I mean, you know, yeah. It is. I mean, last night, because I was able to realize that the politics was blocking a lot of the science, and I decided to both train myself with Stan Grof and holotropic breathwork and psychedelic psychotherapy, but then also I ended up deciding I needed political training. So I went to Harvard's Kennedy School of Government and had my master's and PhD from there. Last night, today and yesterday, there's a reporter who's been sort of trailing me to write an article for Playboy, actually.
Awesome.
And we went to the Kennedy School just for her to show her that sort of influence. And there was General Petraeus, the former director of the CIA. And, I got to have a little conversation with him about MDMA for post-traumatic stress disorder. And so, yeah, it's just shocking to me that this
That's
young...
Amazing.
Decision of, you know, studying psychedelics when I identified myself as, you know, counterculture drug using criminal, you know, anticipating going to jail for being a draft resistor. Now I'm becoming legitimate. And I feel like, you know, psychedelics are becoming legitimate, and it's healing a rift in society that really was created in the 60s.
It is. And what I think so remarkable is that you went through their channels. I mean, you went to the Kennedy Business School and you learn what it takes to actually change policy. And you know, I read the book Acid Test and Tom Schroeder's, of course, all about your story and just like the unbelievable battle and struggle to have MDMA research accepted by the federal government, and like what you went through, and but you used those actual channels, and because of that, you played by the rules to a certain extent, even though it's kind of such a rule breaking topic. And there's a lot of power and inspiration there, I think, for people that they have problems with the system. You know, they want to burn it down or they're upset, but really sometimes you actually can do more, like really have more of a positive impact by working within the system for the goals and the ends that you want to accomplish.
I think that's a really important insight. But at the same time, you know, social change happens when there are people on the inside that are working for change, and there are people on the outside that are demanding change. And you need both. And I think that a lot of times, you know, people on the inside need that support from people on the outside. And so there was actually a really interesting story about President Franklin Roosevelt, when a bunch of people came talking to him about, you know, an issue that they were interested in. And he said, okay, now you've persuaded me. Now go out and make me do it.
Awesome.
Meaning that... you need that. And so I think people just need to recognize that our system, for all of its flaws, is remarkable. I feel like if I would have been trying to do this work in Russia or China,
Hey, Rick, I am so sorry. We have to go to the break right now. I just got totally sucked into your story. You're listening to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly. And when we come back, much more about Rick Doblin and this unbelievable story. So stay tuned and we'll be right back.
Humorous and compassionate. Listen live to The Kelly Ballard Show, insight and inspiration from the great beyond. Kelly is a fourth generation medium and intuitive who covers topics ranging from grief, spirit guides, and listening to your intuition. Kelly can help you get answers and guidance from the other side with a little bit of humor and a lot of healing. Tune into The Kelly Ballard Show, Thursdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, humantransformation.com.
Are you feeling broken from your relationships? Are you second-guessing yourself about friends, family, and lovers? Tune into the hit show that's creating a buzz in the love-seeking community, Love Seeker Radio, finding love for your authentic self with renowned love coach Heather Lynn. Tired of dissatisfying relationships? Kiss them goodbye and power up your love seeker energy. Coach Heather Lynn reminds you that you can just be you, the beautiful and perfect you. Visit heatherlynncoaching.com to learn more.
Goodbye.
We are back on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and my guest today is Rick Doblin, the founder of MAPS, and we are talking about the psychedelic renaissance. I want to jump right back into what we were speaking about before the break, which is the process of social change. And Rick was saying how if he was working in different countries trying to make these changes happen, that the situation would have been very different. So, Rick, I'd love for you to continue commenting on that.
Yeah, I just feel like there are a lot of problems in America, but that there's a certain freedom to criticize the government that doesn't exist in other countries like Russia or China. And just as an example, MAPS was very involved with LSD research, and we were able to start the first study of LSD psychotherapy in over 40 years. And through this process and our other work, I got to be friends with Albert Hofmann, who was the fellow that invented LSD.
Wow.
And shortly before he died, when he died at age 102, he said that he wanted his major book, LSD, My Problem Child, where he talks about at the end how he hopes his problem child can become a wonder child. He asked me, since we've published it in English, he said that he wanted it translated into Russian and into Chinese, and to make additions that would educate those enormous groups of people there that missed out on the psychedelic revolution of the 60s. And so we did get a Chinese edition and a Russian edition, but in Russia and in China, there's laws against speaking positively about illegal drugs.
Wow.
And so there was nobody in Russia was willing to publish the book. And, of course, we made it available on the Internet, but then they blocked the Internet. So it's just to show that the certain kind of freedoms that we shouldn't take them for granted, even though, you know, our society is evolving and there's a lot of repression going on here and a lot of self-dealing and self-interest. The kind of opportunity to advocate for change is astonishing. And I first really started understanding this in the early 1980s, when I had learned about MDMA. MDMA was still legal, and there was this whole network of psychiatrists and psychotherapists that was working with their patients with MDMA in a quiet way, and it was already being sold as ecstasy. And this was during the time of Nancy Reagan and Just Say No and the escalation of the drug war and, you know, drugs being considered a national security threat. And but a friend of mine, you know, we decided that we would try to fight back and we would do it in quiet. And so I had a friend who had a nonprofit that was affiliated with Buckminster Fuller that he wasn't using. And so I was able to take over that nonprofit, and we used it to coordinate our efforts to sue the DEA for DEA administrative law judge lawsuits. And so the idea that the government could give you permission to take money from people, give them tax deductions in order to fight the government was just astonishing. So there is a lot to be said for our system. And yeah. I think that this idea of, the new mainstream, that's exactly what we're about. We're about trying to transform the counterculture of the 60s into the mainstream culture of the 21st century.
That's
and
perfect.
I believe that we're on the way to doing that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we're here talking on Transformation Talk Radio, where that's our goal, is the new mainstream. So I love the wonderful synergisticness of that. And also, I think you touched on something.
I just want to say one thing. So our work with MDMA for post-traumatic stress disorder, it began in 2000, about 15 years ago, and a Dr. Michael Midhofer came to me. He was also trained by Stan Grof in the holotropic breath work, as was I. And he was a member of MAPS for several years, but I didn't know him. And he approached me at a conference in San Francisco in 2000 about ayahuasca. Mm-hmm. And he approached me and he said that he'd had a patient of his that had problems with addiction. And that patient went to St. Kitts for an offshore clinic where they did Ibogaine. And he went along to see how it worked. And so Michael came to me in 2000 and said, I want to work with you on setting up an offshore clinic where we can give people MDMA and LSD. And do a lot of healing work like that.
Yeah.
And my first response was, I'm totally not interested in that at all. Because rather than trying to find, you know, our own little private utopia on some offshore island, I'd much rather go to the heart of the system and work from change from the inside out.
Yes.
To try to mainstream psychedelics. And I said that the regulatory agencies, particularly the FDA, not so much the DEA or NIDA at the time, but the FDA was willing to put science first. And Michael agreed that he would take on that challenge with me, that we would try to go deep into the FDA, deep into the world of science and, you know, drug development research. And it's been the best decision we both ever made. And that idea of transforming from the inside out, that, you know, a lot of times people marginalize themselves. The whole idea that counterculture, that people like the idea of counterculture, that, you know, there's like some of the Republicans talk about self-deportation, you know, it's self-marginalization. And we don't need to do that. We don't need to surrender patriotism to the fanatics or religion, to the fundamentalists. We should reclaim spirituality and patriotism. And those of us that have more of these open-minded ideas should be welcomed in the mainstream.
I think one of the benefits here is having elders. You know, the 1960s movement, there really weren't any elders to help guide it. And now, you know, what we're seeing today is there's people who are here during the 60s. They saw what happened. They saw how it kind of like lost its way, but it never went away. It's always still been there, these attitudes. And now there's people who are kind of like guiding this movement. And then so many millions of younger people and older people who are now being exposed to these idea, this renaissance, really, at a time and a place where we can all, we're more connected than ever, you know, thanks to the internet, thanks to social media.
Right.
And suddenly, like, it feels so much bigger, you know, versus being so isolated and so marginalized. And I'm totally with you. I don't believe that clinging to the idea that, like, we're countercultural and we're different, I don't think that that actually serves our long-term goals, which really is unity and freedom and expression, you know?
I'm so glad that you say that, because that, I think that is the key, is that, and if we look at what's happened since the 60s, so we've had more or less 50 years since the eruption of psychedelics into our culture. And psychedelics emerged at a time in our culture that was quite different from now. And that people were generally scared of the irrational. Of course, we just had World War II and, you know, the triumph or the tragedy of the irrational taking control. Yeah. And, you know, women were tranquilized when they gave birth. Men weren't allowed into the delivery room. People didn't talk about death. My aunt died of cancer and nobody even told her she was dying. That people, you know, didn't think about yoga. Yoga was some weird foreign import. Meditation was even worse. You know, it made you isolate yourself from society and sit on a mountaintop and forget about everybody's suffering. And since then, there's just been this incredible process of our culture integrating. The whole idea of birthing centers are all over the place. We've changed the approach to birth. We've got hospice centers, changed the approach to death. We have pretty much mainstreamed meditation and yoga at every YMCA. And the culture has gone a long way towards integrating the fruits of psychedelics that emerged in the 60s. And I think we're primed to integrate the psychedelics themselves. And when you talked about how in the 60s there weren't the elders, one of the strongest factors right now that makes me optimistic about this integration process is the aging baby boomers.
Yes.
There's a lot of people that had experiences with psychedelics when they were young, but didn't quite continue with it, went into any number of different fields. Many of these people have been quite successful in their lives, and now as they face retirement and death and illness, people tend to gravitate more towards spirituality, and they tend to want to look at those things that were so useful to them. And these are not like examples of lives gone awry, but the best example for me most recently was that MAPS was at the American Psychiatric Association annual conference in Toronto in May. There's about 12,000 psychiatrists come from around the world. And there was a 3-hour seminar that was permitted that was about psychedelic psychotherapy. So it was about our work with MDMA, the Hefter Research Institute's work with psilocybin for end of life. It was very well attended. We also had a booth in the exhibit hall with all the big pharmaceutical companies, which was kind of hilarious to see all
That's
of
amazing.
The, their exhibits that they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on, and we just spent $5,000 for a little booth, and a lot of people came by. But what really surprised us and made us feel totally welcome was that the president of the American Psychiatric Association scheduled 90 minutes during the conference. And there's 10 or 15 things going on at any one time in all different rooms. But in one of the rooms, the president of the APA at the time scheduled 90 minutes, which was going to be about 70 minutes or so of an interview that he himself did with Ram Dass.
Oh,
and
wow.
And then time for questions. It was shocking. So all of those that was interested in psychedelics went to hear it. And then during the interview with Ram Dass, Dr. Paul Sommergrad talked to Ram Dass about how when he was a 19-year-old boy, he took LSD and had a profound mystical experience, led him to study Zen, which eventually led him to become a psychiatrist. So the aging of the baby boomers is one of the greatest factors, I think, that's going to be contributing now to the mainstreaming of psychedelics and marijuana.
Wow. We thank you so much for sharing that story. And I just want to say, I love your positivity and optimism. Like, I am also, I'm really an optimist, and I believe, I have hope. I wouldn't be doing this, and I'm sure you feel the same. If I didn't believe that change was possible, I wouldn't bother. But I really do believe that change is possible and that healing is possible. And I can tell that you do too, from the forces that you've got up against and kind of been victorious, you know? So anyway, we're going to head to the break.
Oh.
I'm sorry. We got to head to the break.
Darn it. Okay, I'll save this story for the next. This is a fantastic next story.
Perfect. As soon as we get back, more stories about the psychedelic renaissance with Dr. Rick Doblin, or Rick Doblin, okay. PhD, whichever it is. So stay with us, and we will be right back on this planet
Great,
with Dr. Kelly.
Kelly.
Okay.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
Hi, I'm Tim Darter.
And I'm Steve Kramer.
Join us on Spirit Fire Radio. Discover how to add the mechanics of meditation to your day.
And watch yourself connect in a whole new way. Find the amazing moments in life's routines that often pass us by. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio.
Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. for your weekly guide to practical mindfulness. And to learn more, visit www.spiritfireradio.com.
Let the transition begin. Tune in to the hit show, Majestic Insights Radio, Success for Life's Transitions, with host Carrie Keith. Carrie is a gifted intuitive coach, healer, and teacher who will lead you through her empowering techniques of ancient wisdom and awareness so you can live your happiest, healthiest, and most vibrant life. Let Carrie teach you the tools of transformation that will help you experience success for all of life's transitions. To learn more about Carrie, visit www.majesticinsights.com.
We are back on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and I have Rick Doblin from MAPS here talking about the psychedelic renaissance and some really amazing stories. Before we continue, Rick, can you just give all of our listeners your contact info and your website info so that they can get in touch with you to learn more about MAPS and the great work that you guys are doing?
Yeah, MAPS.org, MAPS.org is our website. And for any questions, people can just write into AskMAPS at maps.org. And we have staff that monitor that daily. And we try to get back to everybody that writes to us. So if you have any questions, we have an enormous amount of information on our website. I started Maps in 1986, so this is our 29th year. And I felt like we were like the number 600 or so website in the world. There was at one point where this is sort of a sad story, but a fella had his son die in a motorcycle accident. Yeah. And as part of his healing process, he grieved and found that MDMA was really helpful. And so in the around 1994, 95, he called me on the phone and he said that MDMA was so useful to him in this tragedy that he wanted to give us a website. And I was like, okay. My first reaction was, what's a website? it was so early that I had no idea even what the word meant. And so we are one of the first websites in the world, and I've tried to use it as our file cabinet. And we try awesome. To have all of our communications with government agencies, with regulatory agencies. We do drug development the opposite way that the pharmaceutical companies do, because they try to do stuff in secret to reach marketability before anybody else knows what they're doing and try to patent it. We're the opposite. We put everything out in the public. We try to encourage other people to do research with psychedelics too. So there's an enormous amount of information on our website that people can search, including the treatment manual that describes how we do MDMA-assisted psychotherapy, our summary of the research that has cost us hundreds of thousands of dollars of staff time, and it's captured like $300 million worth of research in the public domain. So, you know, just go to the website or just write askmaps@maps.org, and we'll be glad to respond.
Awesome, everyone. So, I mean, that's really more questions than we could possibly answer just on this show or many shows. All there at your fingertips, maps.org. Let's get back to we were talking about optimism before the break and kind of having hope for change for the future, and that's a big motivator for why we do the things that we do. And I'd love to hear your story about this, Rick.
Yeah. Well, you know, because MAPS is involved with psychedelic drugs and marijuana, and because these drugs have been criminalized, I've tended to see the police and the DEA as our opposition, as our enemy, as those people that are trying to stop what we're doing. And there's two stories that make me really hopeful. So the first is that after all of these years, we now have, as a consultant, a senior retired DEA official.
Huh, awesome.
And the reason that this fella is our consultant is because his son enlisted in the military, went to Iraq, went through some tragic situations, has PTSD, and uses marijuana. He's 50% disabled with PTSD and uses marijuana to help him deal with the symptoms.
Yep, I know. Many close friends the same his,
Yeah, and that changed his father's attitude. So now we have senior retired DEA people helping us. And then the other thing that I think is incredibly makes me optimistic is that, you know, we've focused a lot. Our first study with MDMA for post-traumatic stress disorder was mostly women survivors of childhood sexual abuse and adult rape and assault who had PTSD an average of over 19 years. Wow. And with three MDMA sessions, over 80% of them no longer had PTSD at the end of their treatment. And then we did a 3.5-year follow-up, and the results for most people sustained over time. So then we started thinking,
it's incredible.
What about people that have war-related trauma? Is that going to require a different sort of treatment for than childhood sexual abuse? And the two drugs that are approved by the FDA for post-traumatic stress disorder, Zoloft and Paxil, one of them, in some of the studies, worked only in women, didn't work with men who had war-related trauma. So that was a big question for us. But as part of this thinking about the mainstreaming, I said, all right, we're going to title this study. We really wanted to just focus on veterans. But I said, we're going to just, for political reasons, we're going to say that it's a study in veterans, firefighters, and police officers.
Sure.
Just to kind of communicate that first responders have incredibly difficult jobs, and they involve a lot of trauma, seeing people in, you know, terrible situations, people that have been murdered, people that have been burned to death, you know, that the first response. So I didn't actually, I thought maybe we'd get a firefighter or so, but I didn't think we'd get a police officer. So a couple of weeks ago, we finished the last MDMA experimental session in that study. And it'll take us a couple months to get all the data. But it ended up that we had 20 veterans, three firefighters, including one that was from New York City and was at 9/11.
Oh, wow.
And we had a police officer.
Awesome.
We actually had a police officer with trauma from work volunteer to take MDMA-assisted psychotherapy. So,
yeah,
you know, it's like you put it out there and then, you know, sometimes if the time is ripe and the suffering is great enough, people will overcome a lot of their resistances. So the fact that we've actually got a police officer, and I think, and that we've been able to help police officers with trauma from their work.
I mean, it's like we're all humans here is what it comes down to. And, you know, it's such an illustration of human nature that until we personally go through something, we don't really understand it. But once we experience it, like once your advisor whose son had PTSD, once he saw that and he saw how the cannabis helped him, then, you know, that's a complete attitude shift. And it's the same with your police officer. If MDMA helped him, he's going to see it completely differently because, like, we're all human at the end of the day. And many of us are suffering, and you know, if there's therapies out there that can help alleviate our suffering, it's amazing what we're willing to try when, you know, we could be conditioned completely against it. I think that's
beautiful. very much so. And I've actually had, you know, I was a draft resistor for Vietnam. I didn't register for the draft. I thought I would end up going to jail, and fortunately for me, around 60,000 people never registered for the draft, and the system was getting enough people volunteering that absolutely nothing happened. Mm-hmm. But more recently, because of this work with veterans and trying to reach out to the Department of Defense and the VA, through Dr. Richard Rockefeller, who was a tremendous help for us before he tragically died in a plane crash a little bit more than a year ago, but he arranged with his cousin, Senator Jay Rockefeller, for us to have meetings at the Pentagon. So I've actually been to the Pentagon to talk about MDMA therapy for soldiers and veterans with PTSD. And it felt personally healing for me because I think during the 60s, there was this, you know, split in society. And a lot of it was around the Vietnam War and those people that were in favor of it. And those people that were against it, and those people that were against it tended to be the ones that smoked marijuana and used psychedelics. And I feel like our society, you know, split. And now the challenges that we face are so great in terms of global warming, rise of fundamentalism, a lot of the nuclear proliferation, that we need really like all hands on deck. We need everybody working together to really move forward and make progress. And so I feel like this connection to the military, this reintegration of psychedelics, the way that people are sort of recognizing that marijuana would be more wisely legalized than criminalized, that the society is coming together. And that's what makes me feel very hopeful in the face of, you know, enormous challenges.
So what did the Pentagon say? Because I know that, you know, MAPS has this goal of legalizing MDMA for therapy by 2021. And there's MAPS needs more funding because MAPS is not a pharmaceutical corporation, right?
Exactly.
The Pentagon, I read an acid test, right? The Pentagon could fund this with the change in their couch. What is your take on, you know, where were they at with all of this? I'm just curious.
Well, first off, I learned a little bit about military hierarchy. So there was, after searching for years, we ended up making an alliance with a psychiatrist at a Naval Medical Center who had a 10-week treatment program with Marines with PTSD. Mm-hmm. And after this 10-week treatment program, they either were cured enough that they would go back to service, or they would leave the military, or they would be transferred to the Veterans Administration with a disability for PTSD, and then they would get on average around $1.5 million over the course of their life in disability payments.
Yeah.
So the psychiatrist said that he would like to experiment with MDMA in this 10-week treatment program. And we were really excited. And we thought, okay, now we're going to really get to do this sort of work with active duty soldiers. But then he said that he wasn't high enough in the hierarchy, and we had to get permission of the admiral at the facility. So then the admiral of the facility was like, all right, I'm sympathetic, but I'm not high enough. We need to go to the Pentagon. And so Dr. Richard Rockefeller said, oh, I happen to know the Secretary of the Navy. So he had a conversation with the Secretary of the Navy, the Assistant Secretary of the Navy. Coincidentally, the Assistant Secretary of the Navy and I had been classmates at the Kennedy School. We'd been friends, but we had sort of went different ways. So then we had a meeting at, they were sympathetic, so we had a meeting at the Pentagon with the Assistant Secretary of the Navy, the Navy Surgeon General, and they said that they're not high enough. We had to go to the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs.
Oh my gosh.
Just to do a tiny experiment with MDMA with Marines that are suffering PTSD.
Oh my goodness.
And so the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs, his team met with us, and what they basically said is that they're not yet comfortable with us doing work with active duty soldiers. They're trying to create this ethos of soldiers who, you know, don't do illegal drugs, and if they were to start researching MDMA for PTSD, they think that there's so much suffering from PTSD, people might try to do it on their own. They said that's not a reason not to do it, but they wanted us to start with veterans.
I gotcha.
So hey, eventually,
Rick, again, I'm so sorry to cut you off. We gotta go to the break, but that's fascinating.
Okay.
We will be right back on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly talking to Rick Doblin about the psychedelic renaissance and working with the military. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Tune in to the hit show Master's Chambers with your trusted friend, Connie Fife, Mondays, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Each week, Connie will connect you with the best of the best thought leaders from around the globe to share their strategies and best practices. Getting better together. To book Connie, visit ConnieFifeSpeaks.com.
We Carry the Light with host Dr. Susan Allison is the show that inspires you to find the light within and shine your light in the world. You'll hear from guests who model how to be the highest, brightest, most evolved, fulfilled, and conscious humans possible. Tune in each Thursday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com and let Dr. Susan help you discover that you carry the unique light that only you can shine.
Introducing The Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
Well, Welcome back to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and I am here with Rick Doblin, the founder and executive director of MAP, so the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychic Studies. And we are going to wrap up the show by just talking about all of the different projects that MAPS is currently working on and what these look like. So Rick, why don't you tell us about kind of the state of psychedelic research around the world?
Okay. Well, the first point to be made is that starting in 2000, we embarked upon an effort to study MDMA-assisted psychotherapy for post-traumatic stress disorder. And we're now, after 15 years, roughly $5 million, roughly 90 patients, we're coming to the end of what's called phase two. And that's the small pilot studies where you try to figure out your method, figure out which patients you want to work with, figure out how to do double-blind studies, you know, what's the effect size, you know, how to train therapists. So we're coming to the end of phase two, and then we'll be negotiating in early 2016 with the FDA on the design of the phase three studies. And those are the ones that are really the pivotal studies to make MDMA or to make any medicine into a drug into a medicine. You have to prove safety and efficacy, but you don't have to say anything about mechanism of action. The Hefter research group has completed phase two for psilocybin for people with cancer patients with anxiety. Now, we've also branched out. We have a study with autistic adults with social anxiety that's at Harbor UCLA that's getting really good results, preliminary results, and helping people to understand their own emotions, to read body language, to get over their social anxiety. And we also have a study for MDMA for people with life-threatening illnesses that are anxious about dying. And then the Hefter research has studies with psilocybin for nicotine addiction, alcohol addiction, and also basic studies into spirituality. And what my favorite of all, people would be surprised, but a lot of people in the 60s, you know, got into psychedelics, got into Zen, like Dr. Paul Sommergrad from the American Psychiatric Association, and basically sort of decided to give up psychedelics and focus on meditation. And Zen is not particularly sympathetic, officially at least, to psychedelics. But now there's a study in Switzerland that's just awesome. It's lifelong meditators who go to the University of Zurich, get brain scans before and after a seven-day meditation retreat during which they either get a placebo or psilocybin. And they're looking at the depth of the mystical experience. How does that long-term affect people's meditation practice? Does it lead to more compassion and altruism? And then what does it do to their brain scan? And then there's a series of studies that are being done in England with LSD and psilocybin and MDMA about how the brain processes information under the influence of these drugs. So we're getting a much better understanding of how these drugs actually work and what they do. And we're about to start a breakthrough study for us in collaboration with some researchers from the Veterans Administration who used to work there and have developed what's called cognitive behavioral conjoint therapy. And conjoint means couples. So it's couples therapy where one of the couple has PTSD, but it affects the relationship. And so the therapy has been developed for both members of the couple. And when we started talking with the VA about how we want to fund some research with their researchers, the first thought they had is MDMA, love drug, hub drug, couples therapy. And so we're about to submit a protocol to the FDA in just a couple weeks that would, we're proposing that both members of the couple get MDMA. And, you know, you can only make drugs into medicines for diseases. So MDMA can never become a medicine for couples therapy because that's not a disease. But this is the way we're sort of backing into studying couples therapy. And then we're also about to have a major, major breakthrough with marijuana, where for the first time since 1992, when we've been trying to do research to make the marijuana plant into a medicine, we've been able to get FDA approval, but the National Institute on Drug Abuse refused to sell us the marijuana, and they have a monopoly on federally legal DEA-licensed marijuana that can be used in FDA-approved studies. And so after all these medical marijuana states and marijuana legal states, we've finally been able to overcome that resistance. And we got a $2.1 million grant from the state of Colorado.
Woohoo, that's where I live. Yeah, Colorado.
Yeah, yes, yay, Kelly. Thank you and your friends and voters there.
All of our
and
tax
so
revenue.
It's gonna be with, yeah, they just gave away around $8 million for research.
Yep.
And
yep.
It's going to be in 76 veterans with PTSD, and half of it will be taking place at Johns Hopkins, or the heart of the establishment. You couldn't get more mainstream than that, because a lot of their research is funded by the National Center on Drug Abuse. And then the other half is going to take place unaffiliated in Phoenix, Arizona. We're renting space from a marijuana producing facility, legal according to the state. The Phoenix City Council passed a special zoning to permit us to do the study there, because we also administer marijuana. And so we will start to develop a database of whether marijuana helps people with post-traumatic stress disorder.
Oh my goodness. This is like super exciting. And a lot of this is new to me, so I'm extra stoked to get hear it directly from you, just as far as like, wow, there's a lot coming down the pipeline.
There's more psychedelic research now than at any time in the last 45 years. And it looks like it's going to continue to grow, because the resistance and the fear about these drugs is declining as we start to show that in therapeutic settings, we're able to really help people profoundly. I mean, one of the things that I'm most proud of our LSD study that we finished in Switzerland, it was just 12 subjects, but 11 of those 12 had never done LSD before. It's not like aging hippies are the ones that are volunteering for these studies. It's,
right.
You know, people who are struggling with fears about dying, people who have not been adequately treated by currently available therapies or medications, are reaching out. So at a time of need in our society, you know, the wisdom of the 60s, in a sense, tempered by time and by experience,
science,
you know, we're now blending into the mainstream. And I think we're going to see psychedelic medicine and psychedelic clinics the same way that we have hospice centers all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, by 2030, we'll probably have several thousand, you know, psychedelic clinics all over America.
That is a beautiful picture. We've only got a few minutes left. I just wanted to throw it out there. People listening who maybe want to volunteer or want to participate in the studies, can they contact you to get on some kind of wait list, or if they have PTSD or anxiety or anything like that?
Yes, they can. We have on our website a volunteer page, or they could just write into AskMAPS at maps.org. Because we're getting close to finishing our normal phase two studies, it'll probably take us about a year to negotiate with FDA. But what we're looking for right now is couples where one of the couple has PTSD and it affects the relationship. We're hoping that study will start around January or February in Charleston, South Carolina. So anybody that lives near there that's part of a couple where one of the members has PTSD, we'd especially like to hear from them and, you know, see if they could qualify for the study if they're interested.
Wonderful. Okay, well, putting that out there then, couples in Charleston, South Carolina area.
And then also veterans in either in Baltimore area or Phoenix, veterans with PTSD who are willing to try marijuana. They could either have tried it before or not have tried it before, but we're also looking to enroll those people.
Awesome. Well, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I just want to thank you so much, Rick, for coming on the show today and sharing really some insightful and progressive and really exciting information about where all of this psychedelic research and therapy is going in the future. And I can't wait to see how all of this progresses. And I'm very grateful for speaking to you, and would love to have you back on in a couple months. We can talk again about, you know, where things are and where they're going.
I would very much appreciate that, Kelly, because I think the public education is even more important than the research.
Yeah.
Because if we can help the public understand the potentials here and address whatever fears people have about the mainstreaming of psychedelics and marijuana, that will create a ground of support for the research going forward. So I very much appreciate the efforts that you and others are doing to educate people. And I look forward to meeting in the mainstream.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So anyway, this is Dr. Kelly signing off. You can join me every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Central, 3 p.m. Pacific, and 3 p.m. Mountain and 2 p.m. Pacific on KKNW 1130 a.m. Seattle, WBLQ 1230 a.m. New York, and of course, TransformationTalkRadio.com. You can also find me at TheLucidPlanet.com and connect with me on Facebook and Twitter at The Lucid Planet with Dr. Kelly. And next week, I am excited to welcome Momo of the Momo Zone. He is a director, producer, editor, videographer, and it is his goal to motivate people to love themselves and to bring unconditional love into the world. Yes. So stay tuned. Light and love. Blessings to everyone. Thank you again to Rick, and I will see you guys next week.
You've been listening to the hit show, Lucid Planet Radio, with renowned psychologist and author, Dr. Kelly Neff. Tune in each week as we illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. This hit show will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake up to the greatest version of yourself. Learn how to navigate the global shift of consciousness as you explore the deeper knowledge, passion, and purpose within. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for upcoming show topics and to contact Dr. Kelly.